prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And we're still in Shawgust.
Yes.
It is August. Shawgust is going strong. It's been a great month so far.
Yeah.
I love seeing all the posts from people on Instagram and Twitter.
So far, it seems like Dirty Ho is the most watched one, like across all the different people who are sharing, which I fully support that because
I haven't seen Dirty Ho. It's in the Shawscope set. I need to get
okay.
That.
Yeah.
Get to it.
Got to get to that.
Also, not only is it Shawgust, but we're hitting a milestone with this episode. This is movie number 50. 50
that
we're yeah.
Oh, okay. I can't keep track with all the, like the bonus episodes. You're so good at like you do like the anniversary stuff, and I'm just here being an asshole counting dead kids. Like, thank you for being you, Lance.
Yeah, thanks. Well, yeah, this is 50 movies we've covered. This will be it, and we have a guest joining us not only for this milestone, but to close out this year's Shawgust. He joined us for our first ever Shawgust episode last year, which was Black Magic 2. He did the audio commentary on that 88 Films Blu-ray release. And he also runs the fun as hell site, rockshockpop.com, where he writes reviews and blurbs about everything cool in this world.
Pretty much, yeah.
Movies, comics, music, other publications, everything you need to be entertained. So welcome, Ian Jane.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back and excited that it's the 50th.
Yeah.
Yes. Me too.
Caught me by surprise. So I'm like, hey, look at that.
Yeah. Thanks again for joining us again, Ian. We love having you on. For any listeners who may not be familiar with RSP, rockshockpop.com, can you tell us a little more about it?
RSP is pretty much what you said it is. It's a review platform and a forum dedicated primarily to cult films, but we also cover a lot of music. We cover a lot of comic books and stuff. It's a friendly forum. There aren't a lot of jerks on there. I kind of take pride in that. It's not an antagonistic place. It's a place to kind of hang out, make friends, share the things that you love, learn about things that you love, and just, you know, spread all the fun and entertainment that you can get from pop culture and cult films in general.
I can vouch for that because I've been on there reading reviews a lot, especially since, you know, we first connected last year, and I don't participate. I'm a lurker. I'm one of those, but just reading everyone's comments, like everyone is just super friendly. And I'm like, man, it's so awesome. Refreshing over here. And especially coming off of Twitter where it's a fucking hellscape.
It's honestly like something that I take like a lot of pride in. I'm kind of the only moderator there.
Yeah.
And we lucked out. I mean, the site was formed in the ashes of DVD Maniacs, AV Maniacs when it fell. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys that are there, long-term guys, came over from that site. So I knew them, which was cool because it was kind of started with some friends and stuff. But like all the new people that have joined up over the last 12 years and stuff, they're pretty much all awesome. And the occasional jerk that we have had show up hasn't lasted long. So
nice.
We keep it friendly. It's important because a lot of the forums and a lot of social media sites just, you know, they're so negative.
Yeah.
It's probably good Erica doesn't post then. Just
come on.
Just kidding, Erica.
I mean, I probably would. So no, I don't want to get banned by Ian. That's why I'm a lurker. I don't post anything.
Yeah, it's a great site. I mean, I love your write-ups, the honest opinion. So I'm especially excited to hear you talk about and let us know what you think of with this. What is it? Action/horror/fantasy
action horror.
Yeah, this is crazy Shaw Brothers movie.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, and it is Portrait in Crystal from 1983. As of this recording, Portrait in Crystal has 275 views on Letterboxd. Mentioned in our last episode, there are a few versions on YouTube, some better than others, some without obstructions, some with and without subtitles. Mm-hmm. I noticed that the one that we shared on Twitter has some weird audio issues with like random music recorded over the dialogue.
What are you going to do?
You're going to watch the one that says Portrait in Crystal, no, English subs over.
Stop it. God.
Yeah. Find the one that works best for you guys out there. Ian, I know you have a DVD copy of this, right?
I have the coveted out of print Region 3 disc that came out in 2007.
I'm jealous.
It's, yeah. it's in my hand right now, actually, because I'm still kind of baffled by the plot. While you guys are talking, seeing if it makes any more sense, but it really doesn't. But I don't want to spoil anything.
Well, I mean, this movie is not a, you can't really spoil it. I mean, should I try and do a summary? Let's just dive in.
I got my popcorn ready to hear you try to summarize this film.
Oh, okay.
I'm keen to hear this as well.
I mean, I can save it for later. I would love to hear you try.
I'm going to try it.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and try it. Okay. So I'm going to leave a lot out, obviously. There's stuff that doesn't even need to be said that we'll talk about. There's a man named Long Fei, mm-hmm. right? And he's making a statue out of crystal that comes from Jade Mountain. In the very beginning, while he's carving it, he has a friend, and I struggled to find this guy's name, but they call him
Fatty.
They call him Fatty.
Yeah. That happens a lot in these, so we're not fat shaming folks. That's like a lot of Hong Kong movies. If there is a rotund gentleman in it, they just call him Fatty.
Literally what he's credited as is Fatty.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so as Long Fei is sculpting this statue, Fatty is reading the Jade Manual. He says that crystals like this that he's using to carve this statue have magical powers, and that anyone who uses them for, you know, sculpting statues, they must be very careful not to get injured when carving with sharp tools, because if you get blood onto the statue, it will turn into this indestructible human. So Long Fei finishes the statue. It's beautiful. It's sculpted into a woman, and he says something's missing from it. So he purposefully cuts his own finger and rubs his blood on this crystal statue. And then people start getting murdered, right? I guess cut to like timeline, to, you know, period later, but people start getting murdered. So they suspect it's Long Fei and his crystal statue, or they call it a crystal portrait, mm-hmm. that are behind all these murders. And they try to get to the bottom of it, specifically a guy named Poison Yama, whose son was murdered by the, what they believe, crystal portrait, and Prince TND, whose men were killed. So Poison Yama and Prince TND kind of team up to find Long Fei, who is also who's on his own journey with Fatty to find the missing statue, because the statue's gone at this point. How am I doing so far?
I'm actually surprisingly well.
Yeah. You're making it sound way more coherent than it is.
Yeah. And so I'm just going to cut you the chase. They head to this place. They head to Jade Mountain, I think is kind of where they go to. And they meet Du Sha, who is actually, I'm going to start doing some spoilers here, but she's Prince TND's wife mm-hmm. and is behind the killings with Prince TND. They have three foster daughters, Crystal, Jade, and Pearl, who kind of do the killing, the deeds for them.
Okay, that's who was in the graveyard. Fuck. All right. That just came together. I've watched this movie three fucking times, and it took you saying that for me to figure out who was in the graveyard killing them. All right.
Yeah, as I was writing this, I'm like, okay, but who was that? And I'd go back, but basically everyone fights and dies at the end, except for Long Fei, who has like a literal lightsaber duel with Prince TND at the end. Yeah, and a lot of wild shit just happens in between there that we're gonna talk about.
Good job.
Did I leave anything out? Anything
you
very
left specific? Everything out.
I just wanted to get
there's a few subplots that don't wind up meaning a whole lot.
Yeah.
But they're the best parts.
You covered the important parts. Yeah, some of them are. But I mean, you covered the basics for sure.
Yeah. You already helped me figure out who one person was, so yay.
Sweet. let me go over to the crew real quick. Portrait in Crystal, it's directed by Hua Shan. And before directing, Shan was a cinematographer shooting for other Shaw Brothers movies, The Chinese Boxer. He also shot The Awakened Punch, also known as The Fury of the Black Belt from 1973.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
I noticed you logged a few of these, so I'm going to ask you questions.
Okay. Well,
if you remember.
Good luck.
Sean's most popular film he directed is probably the Shaw Brothers sci-fi adventure, The Super Inframan from 1975, which is a fucking blast. That movie's like a live action cartoon come to life.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. It has some of the greatest fantasy villains in it. Princess Dragon Mom and her sidekick, Witch Eye, both awesome female characters. Check it out.
Not going to lie, kind of in love with Princess Dragon Mom.
Yeah, I think when I first I reviewed it, I watched it recently, and you know, no shade to Princess Dragon Mom. I said, you know, Princess Dragon Mom, I love you, but Witch Eye has my heart. she's great. They're all great.
Yeah.
I mean, Shaw directed quite a bit of other Shaw Brothers movies. Bloody Parrot from 1981, which was a close pick for me for Shawgas this year.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. Maybe next year, because it's probably still pretty low.
It's like just over 300 views. Okay. Yeah. So I think it's fine. It's just as wild and incomprehensible as Portrait in Crystal, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's worth seeking out and watching. He also directed The Flying Guillotine Part 2 from 1978, The Soul of the Sword. And there's a series of films called The Criminals that they're produced by the Shaw Brothers, and they're each anthologies of true crime stories that took place in Hong Kong. You watched the first one.
I watched the first one. Not going to lie, because it's on the child kill list. But that, I mean, but also, you know, coincidentally, crossover works for the podcast too.
Yeah.
The first one is okay. There's five of these films, all anthologies. Just based on what I read through with some of the reviews and the ratings, it seems like the fourth one is the strongest, but I want to get to all of them eventually. This one was okay. The first one is about a husband who kills his wife and daughter, and the whole movie is basically like him beating up his wife and then killing her and then running away and getting caught. Like, it's really uneventful.
Does it show killing the daughter?
Off screen, she gets drowned in a tub, but okay. Yeah, it's fine. And then the second one is the one that Sean directed, and it's about a cuckolded husband who kills his wife, lover, and other woman. And it's uncharacteristically slow for him. Like, there's even a slow motion scene in it, and I was like, whoa, what's going on? Is this the same director?
Yeah.
The last segment, though, is fun because it actually, Lo Lei is in it, and Lily Lee, and he is a guy who's like down on his luck on the streets, and then he ends up getting the job at Shaw Brothers Studio as a stuntman. But then he starts getting connected with like gangsters and is coming up like as sort of like a mobster kind of guy. But they have like behind the scenes, like shooting Shaw Brothers stuff. And like,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's like very sort of meta especially for watching that during Shawgast.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. So,
and that was a true story. Like,
I'm sure that one was more loosely based on.
Yeah, I'm sure they all are.
That, but it was probably maybe just like the backdrop for it, but it was more about like the gangster guy getting killed because, you know, his girlfriend and one of his underlings were sleeping together kind of thing.
I haven't seen that. So it shows off like the Shaw sets and the Shaw backlot and stuff?
Not so much of like a little bit of like the backlot, but they're kind of like they're all in costume. Like all of the stunt guys are just kind of sitting around waiting for their scene, and they've got like the director there. And there's a few other like recognizable faces from some of the other films. So,
okay,
but cool. Yeah, it's actually like on Shaw Brothers set, like kind of, yeah, behind the scenes. So it's kind of cute in that sense. So
yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Where'd you watch it? Yeah. Okay. So like most crew members working for Shaw Brothers during the 70s and the 80s, directors were pumping out like 5, 6, 7, 10 movies a year. And Sean was doing this as well during a 10-year period from 1974 to 1984, he directed 30 films. And in 1983, which was when Portrait and Crystal came out, he directed three other Shaw Brothers films, Little Dragon Maiden, Usurpers of Emperor's Power, and Tales of Eunuch, which you had logged.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what that was? You'd watched it, I think, a couple
comedy,
years ago.
Comedy, right?
Yeah. I mean, judging from the poster, it definitely looked like a comedy.
Yeah,
I think it's labeled as action, but it's
probably, I don't remember. It's probably one of the action comedy ones. But, I'll look at it, and if I remember anything interesting, I'll interrupt later.
The poster looks like those, you know, like Hex After Hex, like those kind of very comedic action.
If this one is the one that has, there's like there might be a fight scene that takes place like in one of those, like a ghost is in one of those giant jars and like sticks his legs out and like starts fighting with some. I could be mistaking this with another movie, so don't go out and look at this and watch this and be like, Erica said there was this in it. I don't remember because so many of these are alike and they all blend together, yeah. Which is why Chagas can be hard sometimes when you Chagas too hard.
I watched the trailers for both of those. They were included on the DVD I watched last night.
Okay.
And all I really remember about Tale of Eunuch is that it's got Gordon Liu in it, okay. Which to me is a big selling point,
yeah.
Because I'll watch
yeah.
Gordon Liu in pretty much anything. So I did not see a ghost in a jar in the trailer, but that doesn't mean it wasn't there.
Yeah, I think I'm getting it mixed up with something else. I gave it 2.5, which means I'm not going to remember anything about it. So we should move on.
Okay. Okay, so back to director Sean. He didn't do just Shaw Brothers films, studio films. He directed some action films and some Bruceploitation movies with the Hong Kong Eternal Film Studio. A few of these I watched. Soul Brothers of Kung Fu, 1977 on Tubi. Sun Dragon, also known as A Hard Way to Die in 1979. This one's also on Tubi. And this was actually my favorite of the Sean-directed movies I watched. It's very silly, kind of like a kung fu in a Wild West setting. I think it takes place in Arizona. I reviewed it as Roadhouse meets Miami Connection, if that does anything for anyone.
That does a lot for me.
Yeah. It's got crazy dubbing. Everybody in it wants revenge. It's, you know, it's not nearly Wildest Portrait in Crystal. Very few are, but it makes way more sense, obviously. The fights rule. I definitely recommend that. It's A Hard Way to Die on Tubi.
Isn't Kung Fu Zombie on Tubi as well?
Yes, okay, Kung Fu Zombie. Fine. I'm getting to that one.
I'm sorry.
No. I've been
biting my tongue here waiting because I figured we're going to have to get to it. So.
Yeah. Okay. So Crystal Fist, also known as Jade Claw, another Sean movie that's on Tubi. I have to give a shout out to Tubi's the best streaming service out there.
Yeah,
I mean,
100%.
The Hua Sean options are amazing because finally we do have Kung Fu Zombie from 1981. So Erica, we had chatted about last episode, the movie called We're Going to Eat You.
Yeah.
And Kung Fu Zombie would be a perfect double feature in my opinion for that because the humor is very much in the same vein. Again, none of these are Shaw Brothers produced movies, so the budget and, you know, kind of over the top sets aren't there, but
right.
The choreographed fighting, the stories, they're just as compelling, and Kung Fu Zombie is chef's kiss. Ian, have you seen it? Have you seen Kung Fu Zombie?
Yeah. I have. Again, I have a DVD of it. It's an nice. Old one from the early days of the format, so it looks like ass, but I think it's the only way to have it on physical media. Is to have it in a format that looks like ass. So
yeah,
it was like an old Black Belt Theater release.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're going back like to 2000, probably about 20 years.
Yeah.
Probably 20 years.
That might be the version that's uploaded to Tubi.
Probably,
it's not the greatest.
Yeah.
It almost certainly is. Yeah. Cause I haven't watched the disc in a long time, but I'm fairly certain if it's not tape source, it's taken from a faded, worn looking print. It's not been restored in any way whatsoever. But again, it's, so far as I know, it's the only English friendly way to see the movie. So you take what you can get. If you want some Kung Fu Zombie, and you do.
And everybody needs to watch it. Portrait in Crystal is produced by Mona Fong, Lady Shaw. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows her. She produced hundreds of the greatest, the best. Boxer's Omen, Eight Diagram Pole Fighter, Human Lanterns, all the good stuff. That makes me think I'm very excited for the new Arrow Shaw Scope Volume 2 announcement.
There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, there is.
I mean, it's worth it alone for Boxer's Omen. I mean, shit.
Well, it has all the 36 yep. Chamber movies, too.
Yeah.
Those would be great to have. Like, so many. Like with pretty much every Shaw Brothers film, portraits edited by Chang Xinglong, who does like 600. Like
600 a year.
600 a year. And then lastly, the original score and music, it's Qin Yong Xing and Qin Hu Su. These are two composers who are responsible for the best of Shaw Brothers horror specifically, including Boxer's Omen, Human Lanterns, Seeding of a Ghost, Curse of Evil. Qin Hu also did the music for Eight Diagram Pole Fighter. Mm-hmm. So they have hundreds of credits between them. And the music in this is great. It has like a synth score. It sounds like computer code. And just the sound effects is just all over the place.
There's moments in the score that make it sound like an 80s TV news alert where it's like, beep, beep, beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep. Exactly. I'm going to do what I can now with pronouncing these great actors' names. So I'm just going to kind of fly through this because.
Okay.
Jason Piao Pai plays Long Fei, he's the guy that makes the crystal statue. He's acted in a few Kuei Chi Hung films, such as Killer Constable and Curse of Evil. I mean, like every actor in the portrait cast, each of these people had contracts with the Shaw Brothers. So they're in a ton of Shaw Brothers films. Pye was also in Disciples of the 36th Chamber, Men from the Gutter, Bat Without Wings, and Holy Flame of the Martial World, which you just watched.
Rewatched.
You rewatched.
It's the greatest.
I have not seen
thing.
That.
Oh, it's from 1983. Goodness. Yeah. You need to treat yourself this month, Lance.
Okay.
Shaugus, you know, save that for the end of the month. You know.
Ended on a high note.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Holy Flame of the Martial World, Ian?
Not in years, but it's good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Added. It's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. So he's also in, he's got a role as an extra in Vengeance, the Chang Che film from 1970, which is kind of like a Hong Kong remake of Point Blank.
Oh.
And it's like, that's a top five Shaw Brothers movie for me, maybe even top three. It's one of my favorites. David Chiang is in the lead, and it's just a really, really strong, brutal, bloody revenge movie. I don't think it ever had a domestic release. I imported a Blu-ray from Germany because I love it. So definitely check that out. It's an extra. He's just kind of in the background in a couple of scenes. But he's also got a pretty sizable role in a film from 1978, a non-Shaw Brothers film called Amsterdam Connection, which Crash Cinema released on DVD. So somebody's probably ripped it and uploaded it somewhere. It's not on Tubi, it's probably on YouTube. But if you watch that one in its English dub, you get to see Bolo Young speak in what's almost a rap.
Oh.
For like every scene that he's in. Like he speaks in rhyme and it's almost like he's freestyling and it's nutty.
Wow.
That sounds wild. That's all.
Awesome. I just
Oh, he's in Hong Kong Godfather.
Yeah.
Oh, he's in Hong Kong Godfather as well.
I love Hong Kong Godfather. Man.
Yeah, one of the best cleaver fight movies ever.
Yeah, so Wong Chung plays the goofy friend, Fatty.
It's okay to say it, Lance. You seem nervous every time you say that.
I don't. I mean, because when I first watched it on the version that we had tweeted out, they just call him Fat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that doesn't seem right. And then I looked up another one and it was Fatty. I was like, that seems more appropriate but as a name.
Yeah, he's Fatty on the DVD for whatever.
Okay, cool. Reason. I couldn't, there's no credits I could find, like even in like, you know, the Hong Kong IMDb. I just couldn't find, he's listed, but not his character.
Okay.
So Fatty, I'm going to yell loud and proud, right?
All right.
he's also in Usurpers of Emperor's Power and Tales of Eunuch. Then we have Young Wong, who plays the Prince D&D character, he's the well-established man in society and an expert at Kung Fu, and also turns out to be like the mastermind behind all this stuff in Portrait. Wong is in some of my favorite Shaw Brothers horrors, like Corpse Mania. He plays Inspector Chang in that.
Mm-hmm.
Seeding of a Ghost. He plays the abusive husband in Hex. He's also in The Bastard Swordsman from 1983, Men from the Gutter, and Bat Without Wings. He's great. Dang Wai Ho plays Poison Yama, the mask-wearing Phantom of the Opera-looking guy. He's in Return to the 36th Chamber, also the usurpers of a lot of recasts, but Usurpers of Emperor's Power. Then the last few actors I have on here is Su Chia Chen, who plays Du Sha, who is Prince D&D's wife. She's also in Hex, as well as some of the 36th Chamber films, Dirty Ho, The Black Magic, and her first acting role was Kuei Chi Hung's Ghost Eyes from 1974. We talked a little bit about that.
Did we?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was, I'd watched it for Bewitched.
Is that the one where the girl, like, she goes to get new glasses?
Yeah, it's like the contact, like a possessed contact lens, like, type. Lam Sao Kwan plays Jade. She's in Human Lanterns. And then Crystal is played by Lau Yuk Pak. She's in a few Shaw Brothers movies, too. Thunderclap and The Weird Man.
Yeah, I think she's actually, like, the poster girl in Human Lanterns. Like, the same shot of her, you know, how she gets like, you know, fishnet torture at the end. I think like the picture on the Human Lanterns, one of the variant posters is of her like strung up and like,
yeah, you know. I think that's the one that's on Letterboxd, isn't it? Or no?
I don't know either.
And that's the cast. That's
but
all
anyway,
I got.
She's going to be in torture.
One more. I got one more.
Oh, great. Cool.
You remember the scene where Long Fei and Fatty show up, the woman they're transporting in the wheelbarrow thing. And they're like, hey, this place is abandoned. And that angry lady shows up and she's like, it's not abandoned.
Yeah.
So that's Yu Miu Lin. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. She's one of the female vampires in Mr. Vampire.
Oh, wow. I love Mr. Vampire.
Yeah, she was also in Aces Go Places, but the female vampire in Mr. Vampire is probably the role I'm most familiar with her from. She's still around, at least seems to be. She's like in her mid-80s at this point, but she had a credit as recently as 2021. So,
oh wow, nice.
Hopefully she's still around.
Yeah.
She's also in a movie I've never seen called Disco Bumpkins, which fun. Is probably my new life's mission to track that down.
That title alone.
Yeah.
I'm in.
So Wong Yin, who was the guy who came up with the story, he also wrote Encounters of the Spooky Kind with Sammo Hung. And he wrote Opium and the Kung Fu Master, which is worth seeing if you haven't checked that out yet. And then Chai Nai Ban, again, probably pronouncing that wrong, who was one of the three writers on the movie. Yeah. He was also assistant director on Kung Fu Zombie, Bloody Parrot, Little Dragon Maid, and Tales of a Eunuch, directed by Sean.
Paul Sean, so, yeah.
So it seems like there was kind of like, Sean had like a group, like a core group that he worked with maybe, at least around this period.
Yeah, and it sounds like not just with Shaw Brothers, but with, you know, the Hong Kong Eternal films too, with like
Kung
Fu Zombie.
Cinematographer Nico Wong Manwan was director of photography on Drunken Master 2 and did second unit work on Police Story 3. So some big titles there.
Yeah.
Jackie Chan in the lead, obviously.
Huge.
Yeah. And he worked with Sean on Bloody Parrot, Tales of a Eunuch, Little Dragon Maiden, and Hong Kong Godfather.
Our second Shawgist, our fourth Shawgist episode, and there's like a lot of the names come up over and over again. So I feel like by next year, they're going to be just all old friends.
Yeah, it'll be a long list though. If we're going to recognize like so many names. Well, it's hard to recognize the names for a lot of these people, but
sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Cause as I was going through this, I am recognizing more and more with Shawgist. Mm-hmm. So next year it'll be like, oh, and he also worked on this and this and this. Be a good time.
You can connect a lot of the dots with these guys. Like if you like one of the movies that this director made and you start checking out some of the stuff that the people he worked with on this movie were involved with, odds are pretty good that, you know, you're going to connect the dots and find some stuff you like.
For sure.
I mean, you guys have all seen enough Shaw stuff that you know that a lot of repetition amongst themes and ideas and stuff, but it's just cool seeing a lot of the same people pop up and stuff. Like you said, old friends, you know, watching this stuff for decades and you get to see people. You're like, even if you don't remember the name, you're like, oh, I remember that guy from whatever role. It's just kind of neat.
Yeah, exactly. Like the last segment in The Criminals, which had Lo Lee and Lily Lee, and it was directed by, his name's escaping me. He did Black Magic and Black Magic 2. Ho Ming Hwa,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Oh my God, I remembered something.
Nice.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, you're used to like, you start seeing certain directors and actors all working together. And then all, of course, all the behind the scenes, all overlapping. But that's all the technical aspects. We need to get into the story itself. So we're going to do that right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, Lance, all of my notes are questions.
They're all in question format. Yeah, where do you even start with Portrait in Crystal? Should we just go through your checklist and then see if we can start figuring it out?
Well, my first question is, does this movie take place over 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years? Or all of the above?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, because... It sounds like when Lung Fei makes the statue, there is a couple of years between when the murders start happening, I feel like. But I don't know. Is there? What do you... and then they take the journey. There's the boat ride. So the answer is yes to everything. Yeah, why... Okay, I don't know. Do we want to break it apart like this? What other questions you got?
I mean, a lot... I was half joking, actually. Well, initially my notes were all questions, and then I like formatted them.
It's a good way to analyze a film and try and figure it out. Well,
I'll try that next Shawgist because we'll probably do Bloody Parrot. So I'll probably be like, okay, I have is questions. But I watched it three times because I initially watched it earlier this year.
Yeah.
I watched it again a couple weeks ago because John was here. And here's how I know that this movie is confusing for anybody who watches it for the very first time. John never has to pause something and be like, okay, what the fuck is going on? And John had to pause this movie.
Yeah.
So
just. Yeah. The auto-translate English version is kind of a mess too. It has delays and you don't know who's saying what it sometimes, but yeah, no, it's confusing as hell.
I mean, I cheated and I downloaded a version, so sorry.
if it helps answer questions. I mean.
But yeah, it's one of those where, so I took, what I basically did is I broke it out into, okay, well, here's some semi-important plot elements with fun elements to them, because you already sort of summarized it. And then I have just all my bullets of my favorite moments of gore in this.
Nice.
Because, I mean, you know, it is more of like a fantasy action movie with horror elements. I wouldn't call this a horror movie first if we were ranking genres on this.
Same. Yeah. And I mean, even the comedy in it, it can feel a little bit out of place, maybe even off-putting for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, Fatty is very goofy, very slapstick, especially there's a lot of scenes where he's just, you know, kind of bumbling around. He's sped up, kind of like the robbers in A Christmas Story, you know, and he's shooting him in the ass with a BB gun.
Right.
See, it's funny you mentioned Christmas Story, because when I saw him sped up, I thought Benny Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because usually when he's sped up, he's chasing a lady.
Yeah, it's like he's with that innkeeper, or he's running away from the innkeeper. Right. And yeah, it quickly becomes like this, you kind of want it to be horror, but it's very action comedy. And I was kind of happy, although it was unexpected when, spoiler alert, everybody, I've already said it though, but when Fatty's killed, because it does lean harder, more into the action and dramatic plot line from there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It definitely turns into a horror movie for a couple of minutes at the end though, like where all of a sudden you've had like, you know, some people puking themselves to death and some exploding stomachs and stuff, and which is all great. But then you've got full frontal nudity with a woman, stuck in what they call a net, but which is really more of like lingerie body stocking. And she's like bound, and then they start cutting off chunks of her skin. So that's definitely horror movie territory. It's also the craziest tonal shift in the whole film. Like that.
It's also probably the best scene in the movie. Jade's torture scene.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's my absolute favorite, and it takes a lot to make me cringe. But the fact that, you know, it's sort of this bodysuit fishnet material, and they have it tightly wound over her body, and they're pulling it and tightening it over her so that the flesh is sticking out from it,
while also wringing the sweat from her body.
Yeah. But there's like part of the nylon or whatever it's made out of, one is like cross-cutting straight through a nipple. And as soon as they tightened it, like I cringe, and I was like, oh God, the girl's hurt right now so bad. This is terrible. And the best part about it is they start making a kebab out of her. They start cutting off chunks of flesh. And they
because apparently there's about, I forgot the exact number, 490, 495 open sections of the fishnet outfit she has on.
Yeah.
So when they tighten it, those little pieces of flesh are exposed and they're slicing it off. Enough meat to fill, you know, what did he say, like feed an army, or it couldn't, I don't know. That is very horrific to watch.
Yeah, he's got a line about there being so many pieces of meat on her body that he and his assistant would not be able to eat it over like a month or something ridiculous like that.
It's straight out of some like Hellraiser shit. And that's why I love it.
Yeah. And even within the first 5 minutes, you do have the first murder, which, you know, is after he sculpts the crystal portrait. And that immediately leads to an autopsy with some great makeup effects where they're pulling out pieces of crystal. So yeah, the horror elements and the gore elements are there. Mm-hmm. The stomach blowing apart.
It happens 3 times, and every time it's great.
It is
great. And Poison Yama's death is extremely well done, because he explodes and his body parts go everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even his little like creepy handyman, like those skeleton men. I mean, first off, like it's Shaw Brothers. The set designs and the costumes are just on point. They look freaking great. But I love Poison Yama's little skeleton men. Again, another callback to Super Inframen, but it looks like Dragon Mom skeleton soldiers in a way. They have like
these skeleton connection, elements. But you're right.
There's enough elements to consider this horror.
Yeah. Even like the first guy who gets killed, and they do the autopsy on later, they show his face and it's all burned and there's smoke coming off of it. It looks great. with that coming off of it. There's when they're at the inn, like, and they roll up with the cart and they're going to go into the inn, but Crystal's like, no, like, I don't want to stay here. Before they get there, the black and the white assassins, I think that's who's there. I'm still a little iffy on some stuff. I think they're the ones who have been hired to hunt down Long Fei, but they show up early and there's some really great, if you blink, you miss them, kills. One guy gets like a handful of chopsticks shoved in his mouth and that goes through the back of his skull.
Yes.
And then another guy, I think, gets stabbed with flower stems, I think. Or maybe they must be fake flowers because there's no way they could be real flowers. I don't know what they were.
The guy that's running out the door, kind of?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something going on there, but that whole scene is real. And there's like a severed head, I think, even like on the table just for like a quick second.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
And then at the very end, when Fatty has been turned into a quote unquote moron, he stabs a woman.
Oh, like through the cheek.
Face with a pole, like, through the cheek. It, I mean, there's some stuff that I love like that in here.
Yeah,
it's also that really weird moment where the guy in like the Phantom of the Opera mask is playing it's like a bone banjo. Yeah, it's like somebody's rib cage
with these animated lights kind of bouncing on.
Yeah, the lights go nuts and the soundtrack goes crazy again, and it's I guess surrealist horror in a way.
That's in my what the fuck / weird ass eye candy notes section. I put bone.
That's probably the right spot for it.
Bone instrument that disables the morons is my note.
Yeah, I want a guitar like in that shape and just have that design on it. It's like a rib cage.
I want that dungeon. Give me that dungeon.
The one with all the booby traps? Oh, you're talking about
booby traps. Yeah.
The giant spike balls that swing around and all that stuff.
That's how Fatty meets his demise.
Oh, poor Fatty.
And that, I have to say, that's kind of an unexpected scene to me because he, up to that point, he's like surviving all these ailments and all these attacks and he's through the whole journey. So I applaud it when, Long Fei, he finds him kind of like chained up in a cell, releases him. And Fatty at that point is completely like poisoned or in a trance or something. Long Fei's trying to slap him out of it and snap him out of it while all these booby traps are going off. And I'm like, okay, well, Fatty's going to come back. You know, we can't lose Fatty.
Right.
And then, boom, a big ball with spikes all over it just impales him and kills him. So I loved that. I was unexpected by that quick turn of events.
Yeah, same.
It's good.
I didn't see it coming either. My favorite moment with Fatty, though, is when they zip across the water and then all of a sudden he's like, they're there and they're under, he pulls that eel out of his underwear and he's going to eat it. He's just like, all right, cool. Found an eel in my underwear. Time for lunch.
Found dinner. Yay.
Yep.
That zip lining scene when the boat just explodes is too much. Like when that happened, I was like, this is the best.
I mean, the whole movie. And I think we've mentioned this on Twitter or maybe just in conversations with Adam on Letterboxd, but the whole movie is so fucking fast paced. It almost feels like it might be a better experience to watch it at like 0.75 speed than it would be to watch it at regular speed.
Yeah. And it's only 77 minute runtime. Yeah. So everything is in your face. You're basically just being forced to watch all this wild shit like so fast that your brain can't even comprehend, but it's so captivating but it's frustrating and exhilarating at the same time because you're like, what the fuck's happening? But I can't stop watching.
Yeah, there were even a couple of spots where the subtitles on the disc were so fast that I missed them.
Same, yeah. But that's kind of the charm of it too, where it's just one of those movies where you're done watching it. And, you know, the first time you watched it, your review was just, LOL, what? Yeah. So, which is appropriate. I mean, that's exactly how you feel after watching this movie for the first time, because it is so ridiculous. It is so fast paced. It does have those tonal shifts. It's magical in that way because it's not as much of a straightforward horror, Boxer's Omen or Hex or Bewitched or anything.
Yeah, I mean,
like
I would take Boxer's Omen out because that's wild on itself. But you're looking at Bewitched and like Black Magic and Hex and Corpse Mania, those are like scary. Those are legitimately like horror stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And yeah, and like you said, it's so fast paced. When most people think of Shaw Brothers, they think of Kung Fu and the fighting scenes. Mm-hmm. And the fight scenes in this, compared to other Shaw Brothers movies, I don't want to say it's clumsy, but the way it's filmed, the way Sean films these fight scenes is just a lot of people doing like tornado spin kicks in the air and like a lot of close-up zooms on their face and maybe one of them laughing for a minute. Like there's not a whole lot of fighting going on. There's a lot of jumping and throwing objects and yeah. the camera following it. There's some good fight scenes at the end, but most of them up until that point is just like a lot of backflips where it just seems the fight scenes are kind of a mess to me, in my opinion.
Yeah. They remind me more of like modern action movies where there's a bunch of like quick cuts during a fight scene and it's shot super close and you can't really see anything for that part of it. But yeah, I agree. Like it is just a lot more of the sort of flying through the air wuxia element versus actual like sword
choreographed fighting. Yeah. Right.
Some of the swordplay at the end is pretty cool, but I think overall, like if you were to just boil this down to its martial arts element and its kung fu element, it kind of sucks, to be honest. it's all the crazy shit happening around the fight scenes that holds it together and makes it whatever it is.
Yeah, and I feel like he is taking the camera work and how he's shooting the everything else to the fight scenes, which kind of makes it work for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's always like something crazy and colorful going on around it, and you know, maybe lasers are blasting or somebody's pulling the moon down out of the sky or something like that. So there's always like interesting stuff to accent it, but in terms of like the actual like skill involved in the fighting, it's nothing to write home about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that scene of it's Crystal, right? Pulling the moon
she
from
pulls the moon down, night. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she kind of blows it over to Long Fei. A lot of just moments where you're like, what's real? What's happening? I mean, nothing in this is real, but it's just,
yeah.
And then you get to the zip lining off the boat. You're like, okay, this is just, too crazy. I love it.
At the same time though, like a lot of the fight scenes, you mentioned them, just a lot of people jumping around and flipping around and stuff like that. If you think about it, Super Inframan, a lot of fight scenes going on in that are kind of shot the same same way. So, I mean, it seems kind of clear to me that like the director's interest just wasn't in the martial arts side of the movie.
It was, that's a good point.
Throwing everything in the kitchen sink, you know?
Yeah, and he doesn't, like, he relies heavily on a lot of the close-up shots, not just in the fight scenes, but, you know, it's kind of like this telenovela, like, soap opera look. Like, he zooms in on reactions of characters, which, you know, even during kind of, there's never really a boring moment, but when characters are just talking back and forth, his camera work keeps it very dynamic, and you're very, like, still. What is happening when you're just watching two people talking?
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with him kind of shirking the martial arts in favor of bringing in the weird, because I think like another one of my favorite, I guess, sets in this, and I would love for this to be my summer home, is the prince's son when he's like cooking up the poison and he's got his huge purple cauldron with the giant skull in it. He's got a wall of fucking skulls that like shoot out from there. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want that in their house? Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty gorgeous.
Yeah, the sets, again, it did remind me a lot of, you know, the same year Boxer's Omen 1983 came out. A lot of the big set designs like that are just so impressive.
Yeah.
Makes me want to live there.
I want it, my summer home. It's got a little moat around it. Keeps the intruders out because, you know, I don't like people. So just
a big gong with like snake thing.
Oh my God. I want all of it. I want the booby trap dungeon underneath my moat house with my big purple cauldron and
wall. You want that fishnet torture device?
No comment.
Can you have a moat in Texas?
You can do anything you want in Texas.
As long as you don't have an HOA, I think you're good.
That's sad. That's the truth.
I feel like Richard Garriott, who does like, he's a big game developer. I feel like he probably has a moat, like a castle up in the hills or something.
Probably. I hate it here.
So, yeah. Anybody have anything else they want to talk about in this movie? I feel like there's a lot to talk about, but go ahead, Ian. Yeah.
I love that the venom is administrated by what looks like a plastic skull with light up eyes that's kind of on the end of a selfie stick.
Oh my God, it's so cute. It's straight out of like something you get at like Spirit Halloween.
Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like. You know, something you find at a dollar store or something. Yeah. And it's great.
That's perfect.
What do I have that we haven't talked to? Oh, I love the eavesdropping with bamboo poles.
Yes.
That's fun. Yes. But also double as a weapon. Because they try to kill Long Fei with one. They use it to eavesdrop on him and Fatty, and then later they try to kill him with it. The graveyard fight with Pearl, who I know who that is, thanks to Lance's summary of the film. How she has like the elongating arms, yes, and the bony clawed hand and her gripping.
That's a creepy scene too.
Yeah.
And she tears out Fatty's throat, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that scene a lot too. The cave guard outside of Dusha Palace. I like him. He's fun.
His fight scenes, I thought, were some of the best.
Better ones.
Because he takes care of two people, and then I think Poison Yama pops up, right?
The black and the white assassin guys show up, and it happens so fast. Again, like 0.75 speed, folks. Like, it might be the best bet for you because they die so quickly, but really, you do see their faces melting from something.
Yes.
I don't know how or why it happened, but that they're dead at the end and their faces are melting. I'm on board with it, even though I don't know what happened.
Yeah. He like spears them and then they kind of just go up in flames.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I think maybe just like the final battle between the prince and Long Fei as well.
Well, I always love and respect how Shaw Brothers in their movies.
100%.
And this one is, you know, it's kind of what I was hoping for. You know, it's okay. Long Fei killed Prince TND and the end.
Yep.
Like just boom.
Yeah.
And I love those.
Yeah. I love the abruptness that they finish with, just like boom.
Yeah. Every time it's
no follow up. No, poor Fatty, we'll miss him. No, yeah. Quite love being resolved. It's just, nope, bad guy's dead. Off we go.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is like, they know there's nothing else to do. Cause yeah, Fatty's dead. Crystal died trying to hop into the fight and all the other bad guys are dead. What else is left? No, just end it. Here's mm-hmm. credits. Like, that's respect. Hollywood, please fucking take note. Other than that, I think I got all the gore stuff that I love in this. All my weird eye candy stuff.
Yeah, one thing I did like was, I mean, it's not as impressive as like, you know, the spells that are detailed and Bewitched that we went over mm-hmm. for your episode. But I do love like the original myth and the whole setup of the portrait mm-hmm. And crystal and the whole blood on the crystal, the actual statue will come to life. I felt like that's some strong storytelling. I really dug that.
Okay.
I just have to point that out. I have to applaud that. Come on. But yeah, overall, everybody love it?
I love this movie.
Yep. Yep. No question.
I hope this gets a Blu-ray from 88 or maybe Arrow or at some point.
It deserves one. It would look fantastic in high def.
It's really such a
like wildly colorful movie. I mean, all the Shaw stuff looks good, but this one is better than average. I mean, the color is frequently really garish, but mm-hmm. it works.
Yeah.
It's like Bava Argento level color work.
Yeah, for sure.
It is. Yeah.
And Ian, what about a double feature pick for Portrait and Crystal?
I'm going first.
Yes, if you don't mind.
Okay. No, I don't mind. So following along more of like the fantasy line and the horror line, I went with Thrilling Bloody Sword. Do you guys know that one?
I love that one. Yeah, Golden Ninja Video put that one out. It's great.
They did. It went out of print. It's getting reissued in a little while, a week or two. So don't pay eBay scalper prices for it. But
yes.
Yeah, 1981. Taiwanese fantasy martial arts nonsense film, kind of a retelling of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. It's got demons. It's got a fat guy and crazy magic. A lot of like weird optical effects like Portrait and Crystal has. It's got a cyclops. It's got a guy with a butt for a head. And it works. It does. It works as like, I think, a double feature just because it has kind of a similar tone where you really don't know what's going to happen. Even if some of the elements seem familiar, like the fairy tale elements, you really don't know how it's going to play out or what the director's going to throw at you next.
Yes. Nice. I love this one. This was actually like a backup double feature pick for me because I was thinking exactly along the same lines as Ian. And yeah, I picked this one up from Golden Ninja, folks. I think you might even be able to pre-order the re-release now.
You can. Okay. Yeah, I checked before we started recording just to make sure.
Yeah. I got to see this at Weird Wednesday with a crowd because Laird knows Justin, who runs Golden Ninja Video. And mm-hmm. it was so much fun to see with a crowd.
My review was like Sword in the Butt for the win. Like, not very simple. Of course.
Lance, anytime Lance can incorporate button as a review, it's going to happen. Oh,
yeah. You know, I didn't realize that.
You do that a lot.
Well, what about you, Erica? What's your double feature pick?
I think there's a lot that you could go with. Mm-hmm. I haven't been Shaugustin as hard as I wanted to so far this month. But I think there's a few. We mentioned one of his other films, Bloody Parrot, I think could go well with this.
For sure.
We've talked about Battle Wizard before. I think Buddha's Palm, we talked about last episode. That's another one that I think could go well with it. And then there's another one. I don't think it would go necessarily well with this one, but I did want to mention it just because it's our last Shaugust episode for the month. And this movie, I fucking loved it, called Fangs of the Cobra. Ian, have you seen this one?
No, I don't know that one.
Okay, so there, a woman has a pet cobra named Shishi, and it opens with her like running around frolicking, and the snake is just like, they're like playing together. Like, obviously it's cut to make it look like they're playing together, but she legitimately is like handling this cobra and like petting it and stuff like that. So she ends up getting married, but her husband is afraid of snakes. And so Shishi can't come. And Shishi is like really upset about this because, I mean, this is the best snake in the fucking world. So Shishi comes to the rescue all the time. Shishi is the absolute best pet ever in a film. I mean, there's maybe some dogs that can compete with her, but she is the best. I do want to warn folks, there is like a real cobra versus mongoose fight in this. But, you know, spoiler, Shishi wins. But it's so much fun. Like, I watched it and I was just like, I want my own Shishi. And I've never wanted a snake in my life. But anyway.
What's it called again?
It's Fangs of the Cobra.
I don't know it.
I have a DVD of it. And yeah, it's fun. I mean, even the opening, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? She's like running around a field and like, la, la, la. And like the snake's just like chasing after her.
That's amazing.
Anyway, that's not my double feature pick, but I had to bring it up because it's Shaugust. But my double feature pick is one we mentioned earlier in the episode, because I think in 1983, there was a discount on laser effects.
Okay. Yeah.
So both of these movies have a lot of that. Both of them have very wild elements to them. So my double feature pick is Holy Flame of the Martial World, 1983. And this is basically about a brother and sister who get separated at birth. The Holy Flame is this weapon that can be used. These evil clans want to get a hold of it because, you know, they want it for their power. And so, but the brother and the sister get raised separately, but they both get trained in martial arts and then they team up at the end. And it's goofy and it's a lot of fun. There's lots of lasers and just, it works well with this, I think, just for that element alone.
Nice.
What about you, Lance?
So yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought like a Hua Shan double feature with Bloody Parrot would be really great, 'cause it's just this mismatch of like Shaw Brothers' greatest stuff, horror, action, fantasy. But I'm just going to go pretty basic here. I'm going to go with Obayashi's Houssou from 1977.
That's not basic. That
I mean,
great.
You guys are doing some deep cuts, but yeah, this one, this one is, you know, like Portrait, it's more of a strange fantasy world. It does have horror elements, but you know, released in 77, it uses like so many groundbreaking techniques with all the added animation, the effects, floating head, severed fingers, all the childlike humor in the characters. It's just this wild ride that I would, after I watch Portrait, I kind of want to throw this on. It's a short 88 minutes, so it's another fast, you know, breakneck speed movie like Portrait. Yeah, take some drugs. Watch these back to back.
I mean, highly recommend both those.
It's a kinder, gentler movie, but yeah, it's definitely tonally and thematically, maybe there's some similarities for sure.
And there's a pet in it. You have a cute cat as well.
It's no Shishi.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for.
Sorry. No one will ever be Shishi.
No one will. So yeah, with that.
That's going straight to the top of my watch list, by the way.
Good. Yay.
I need to find that. You said you had a DVD of it. Well, I guess I found it.
Yeah, you did find it. You can borrow that.
I'm walking out of your house.
There you go.
So Shaugust sadly comes to an end.
It's not sad. It's always.
I mean, it's still August after this. Yeah. We still have more movies. We
still have time to watch more Shaugus.
Yeah. Shaugus is not just one month a year. It's every day of the year.
It's in your heart all year round, folks.
It is. Ian, thank you again for joining us. Always a blast chatting with you.
Thank you for having me. Yes, agreed. Anytime you want me back, you let me know.
Of course. Next August, of course.
If you get to the point where you run out of Shaw Brothers movies, you could always do Golden Harvest stuff and call it Golden Hoggest.
Oh. Thank you. Oh, my God. I was trying to figure out a pun for Golden Harvest. Thank you. Oh, my God. Copyright Ian Jane, folks. You heard it here.
No, you can have it. You can have it.
Are you writing that down? Thank you.
I don't want to forget this.
But yeah, so next month, though, we're going to no more Shaugust. We're going to go in a different direction.
Okay.
And we're actually going to be covering a subgenre that's new for us here at Unsung Horrors, one we haven't done yet. So we're going to be getting into Nunsploitation. Woo! So next episode, my pick is Flavia the Heretic from 1974. Directed by Gianfranco Mingazzi and starring the beautiful Florinda Balkan as Flavia. So she is a 14th century nun who's starting to question a woman's place in Christianity and really just the world in general. I won't give too much away about the events leading up to her revenge, but she ends up joining the invading Muslim army and coming back to the convent and laying waste to everything, like everyone there. Her father, who like she had a really strict upbringing and forced her into the convent. The torture in this is gloriously gory. I mean, it's fucking out there. And I think this is actually one of my favorite in this subgenre, the nunsploitation subgenre. So I'm really excited to talk about it. It's been a couple of years since I watched it. I don't remember it being as horny as a lot of nunsploitation movies tend to get, but the torture scenes are.
It makes up for
chef's
it.
Chef's kiss. Yeah. Okay. So good.
Yeah.
Now this
is classier than average.
Nice. Yeah.
This is a good reason for me to break into that Nasty Habits box set, though, that I picked up from Severin.
Good. Okay. I was going to ask if you had that. So, yeah, there will probably be some great double feature options in there.
Nice.
So, as of this recording, Flavia the Heretic has 827 views on Letterboxd. This is not streaming. Sorry again, folks. I promise my next one will be easier. I know I say that a lot, but I really mean it. After this, my pick will be easier. But this does have a Blu-ray release. So... Mm-hmm. Shameless Screen Entertainment. They're the guys who put out the ones with the yellow case. You can get it directly from their site, but keep in mind that they're in the UK, so it would ship from there. Or you can get it on Amazon. That's where you got yours, right?
That's where I got mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Diabolik, unfortunately, doesn't have Shameless on their site.
It's got a US Blu-ray release.
I saw that on Amazon, but it was like $50.
It's out of print, but it's out. It does exist.
Okay.
It's out of print. I don't know if, I think it was... Scorpion, maybe through Ronanflix, did it.
Okay. I don't
know. Sometimes that stuff gets reissued.
Okay. Well, as of this recording, that's out of print. Don't pay $50 for the Blu-ray. I love this movie.
No.
Yeah, don't do that. The Shameless one, I think you can get for probably like $20.
Yeah, right, that's now, about what it was.
So. And that one has a Kat Ellinger commentary on it, so should be worth it alone right there. So, Ian, you want to tell folks where to find and follow you on the socials?
Yeah, just search for Rock Shock Pop on Twitter or Facebook and you'll find me. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's IanJane75, but it's more about comic books and stuff there, or pictures of me drinking beer in a lake, or just random random delicious dinners that I'm eating. It's not always movie related, but sometimes it is.
Okay. If you're not already, you can follow Unsung Horrors on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. And you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Hex Massacre.
You can follow me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Instagram at L Shibe.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks once again, Ian, for joining us for Shaugust.
Yes. And thank you for Golden August.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video! Woo!